Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm Matt Goldberg, the site's managing editor, and with me, as always, are associate editors Adam Chitwood.
Howdy.
And Dave Trumbor.
Hello.
A couple weeks ago, we got the big news that J.J. Abrams would be directing Star Wars Episode 7. We didn't talk about that on last week's show because Sundance had just ended. We really wanted to get into that while the films were still fresh in our mind, but we also know that we really need to discuss this news. It'll be one of the biggest stories of the year, and there's a lot of debate about it, and it was a surprising decision, one that carried a lot of geek weight, and in a weird way, it's weird that J.J. Abrams gets to be ordained, in a weird way, the new Lord of... I don't want to say Lord of the Geeks, but it's like... It's as if it's like Spielberg's like, let me groom you as my successor. You will be the one to truly follow in my footsteps. Person who was restoring my movies at age 14. And the thing with J.J. Abrams is... I think the key difference between him and Spielberg is that Spielberg made original films. And J.J. Abrams, even his most original film, Super 8, is really a Spielberg movie. And so that's sort of the question here. Do we want a guy with a voice of his own, or do we want a guy who is competent and knows how to direct action and is technically proficient enough to disappear into a Star Wars film? And I have reservations because I don't know if J.J. Abrams understands what a Star Wars film is, even though that he's been more of a fan of that. My reservations come from Star Trek. Because when I see Star Trek, I see a very fun film with a script that doesn't really hold together that well. But that's okay, because he makes it so much fun and rushes it together. And Mission Impossible 3 is sort of the same way. It's a really fun film, but if you take 5 seconds to think about it, it's like, wait, what?
Yeah,
and, this doesn't make sense. But with Star Trek, I think Star Trek feels like Star Wars. So I'm conflicted about it. I'm conflicted about how is he going to do with Star Wars. Is he the best guy for the job, or is he just the adequate guy for the job? Because I don't think anyone thinks he's wrong. Does anyone think he's just flat out wrong for the job?
No, and I think that, I mean, listen, this franchise is ginormous. They weren't gonna let, like, I know Matthew Vaughn had been like talked about like in talks for the director and stuff. They're not gonna let someone come in and do something that's wildly different from anything that's come before. They want something that's gonna be big and gonna be fun, gonna have enough of a, you know, like an authorial voice, a directorial voice that's gonna make it interesting. But they don't want to, I mean Disney, everybody doesn't want to reinvent the wheel here. And I feel like Abrams showed with Star Trek that he could make something fun and interesting that not only appealed to the masses, but also appeals to, I mean, like hardcore nerds. Like Jordan Hoffman is like the biggest Star Trek person in the world, and he hated the choice of J.J. Abrams directing that. But he likes the movie. It's a fun movie. And I think at the end of the day, like, I mean, J.J. Abrams is going to make a fun – he makes big, fun, adventurous movies that everyone likes. And I think that's – I mean – I think it's not a bad choice. It's not the best choice in the world, but I think it's going to be fine.
Dave, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a safe choice, like Adam mentioned, from the studio's standpoint, from the franchise standpoint. And, you know, with the Kathleen Kennedy and Steven Spielberg connection, it is kind of a – I don't know if it's a passing of the torch, but it's the safest, most comfortable choice that they can make. And I'm conflicted with it too. I think I would have been with any director coming in for this new trilogy, at least the first film of it. I'm conflicted because I do like Abrams' work, but Matt, like you mentioned, I mean, there's not anything that's particularly interesting or definitely not controversial. There's just no real, I don't know, there's nothing
there's
to
no
really kind of look forward to except,
there's
yeah,
no
there's nothing chancy about it. It's
there's
just
no
a big, fun movie.
Insight. Right. I think that's another thing. When I look back at the article I wrote about five directors I'd like to see take on Star Wars Episode 7. And I look at them, and J.J. Abrams was on the list, and for the reasons that we're talking about. He's talented. If you give him a good script, he'll do good things with it. If you give him a bad script, he can still make an entertaining film. He's competent. But I look at the other directors on this list, and I just see something more from them, and maybe this is just a grass is always greener. I think if Brad Bird had gotten the job, everyone would have been out of their fucking minds ecstatic. I think that would have been great. But I look at David Yates, and I think he took Harry Potter and found the essence of that character. You take Harry Potter, almost as big as Star Wars, and you get it right four times, you've done something really well. Matthew Vaughn, what I like about him is that he is diverse. He's like, I'm going to do a gangster film. I'm going to do a superhero film. I'm going to do an R-rated superhero film. I'm going to do a fantasy film. And I like all of his movies. So there's diversity there. And yes, he does have a personality, but it's not really overbearing. It's not like a Matthew Vaughn film.
And, but I feel like if Matthew Vaughn was on it, like, I don't think he would have lasted long. I think there would have been a lot of headbutting. Like, we've read, like, reports surfaced that his take was he wanted Chloe Moretz in the lead role. And he's a very interesting guy. But, I mean, we've seen him drop out of three projects that he's been attached to. Mm-hmm. I don't think he likes a lot of studio interference. And at the end of the day, when you're dealing with a franchise this big, like, I would have I would have loved to see a Matthew
Vaughn.
Well,
wait, back up, because we're talking about two different things right now. We're talking about artistically who would we like to see and business-wise. And I agree with you, Adam, that business-wise, Matthew Vaughn would not have been a smart choice. He would have been...
I'm just saying it wouldn't have happened. I don't think it would have happened.
A lot of things wouldn't have happened. I mean, I was an unlikely choice, but artistically, I would have liked to have seen a Matthew Vaughn Star Wars.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen that. Sam Mendes, then we're sort of going down the next level, but I think, again, you take a huge franchise like Bond, and what that film has is insight. And I think that Sam Mendes is as good as the genre that he's in. He's a really good master of genre. And that's good. And then J.J. Abrams is competent. And he's savvy. And see, that's where I think that's the balance of, where it's he's good enough as a director, but he's really good at the business side of Hollywood. He's a veteran who's been in it for a long time. Since the mid-90s, he knows his way around Hollywood. He knows he knows the business. He's very smart at it. And to me, that's where I find it, I don't want to say distasteful, but I find it that he gets this job because he's better at the business side of it than he is the movie-making side of it. And when we look at the movie-making side of it, we're saying he's a safe choice. But is that what we really want? Is that inherently good that he's good enough?
I think you have to ask yourself, do you like the Star Wars films, and I'm talking about all six of them, do you like them as from a movie-making standpoint, or do you like them from just a fun sort of franchise standpoint? And there's a clear divide, I think, between the original trilogy and the prequels that came out. And what's going to happen with this new trilogy, I think it's going to be an interesting kind of discourse and an interesting look to see which way they kind of lean with that. I guarantee with this selection of Abrams that it's definitely going to be more on like the franchise kind of popcorn end of it. I don't think you're going to see anything that's really like a standout film as far as artistry goes.
I would venture to say that all of the Star Wars films, including the originals, are popcorn franchise movies.
I mean, Empire is certainly dark, and Empire's paved the way for how sequels are made. But I think, like, looking at it overall, like, these are movies made to be entertainment. Like, I don't think, and you know, George Lucas was pulling the strings behind the scenes. He didn't direct Empire or Return of the Jedi, but I don't know if there's like a strong authorial voice, but like directorial wise. But in the first trilogy, simply because Lucas wasn't directing them. But I mean, I will agree that, I mean, they are landmark movies, but I think at the end of the day that they are franchise movies. They are
They're not like art house films or anything.
No, but I think that we can obviously tell from the original trilogy to the prequel trilogy that there is a heart that is missing in the original, and it's very cold and it's very calculating. Right. And it doesn't
Lucas
really,
was hungry.
He was so hungry. The toys don't sell anymore. So hungry. I just imagine him like, I'm so, the fridge is empty. Time to make the prequels. But he doesn't. Now that's not a concern of, wow, does he not have money? But the thing with the prequel trilogy is that it is very cold. And when you look at the original trilogy, yes, they're all quote-unquote popcorn flicks. But for me, a popcorn flick is almost derogatory because it says, shovel your fat fucking face with this expensive concession and let the pretty lights flash in front of you. What we really want is an experience to transport us. And that's what the original trilogy does. It wraps us up in adventure and love. And when you see, you know, Leia looking at Han's like, I love you. And he looks back and goes, I know. Like, boom. That's what hits you. That is the moment. And yes, it's fun and it's big. But when we look at the fight between, you know, Luke and Darth Vader in Empire, we're not looking at the choreography of the fight and, oh my God, wasn't that amazing? We're looking at, I am your father. That's the moment we remember. Whereas if we look back at Episode One, it's like, oh yeah, that lightsaber battle is really elaborate. It has no emotional weight, and that's what I want. I want emotional weight.
Computer logo.
Exactly.
Computer Yoda and computer Christopher Lee fighting each
other. Oh my sweet Jesus. Exactly. What I want is the emotional stakes more than the technically proficient boom bang popcorn film. And I think you can have both, but the question is, can Abrams deliver both?
You were talking about that in my mind. I was just thinking Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, and I'm just depressed that Brad Bird isn't doing it. Because that's exactly like what you were saying. It's such a well-made popcorn movie, like big, entertaining. There are stakes. You like feel things.
Yeah, or even going back to The Incredibles, I mean, he did a great job of balancing sort of these animated characters, but you had this real connection to him. And there's a lot of action, a lot of good set pieces in that film, too. Yeah, but we can lament. It's not involved.
Sorry,
we're sort of stuck with Abrams. I don't want to say stuck because
I think Abrams.
No. It's a great point. I just think that. Yeah.
No. I mean, I agree that. I was just wanted to point something out. A friend of mine pointed this out to me, that we're talking about Episode 7, but he's not going away. This is Abrams. Even if he stays on, even if he doesn't direct, he will be a producer, just like he's a producer on Mission Impossible ever since 3. He will not leave.
Bad Robot is coming in to partner on
right.
this.
Right, and he won't leave Star Trek either, which is very depressing.
The interesting thing is that he's got to balance all three of those going forward to sort of 2015 and beyond, too. That's a whole other area that we can get into.
True, but where does he put his attention?
How are they not going to bleed into each other? And that's the thing. I don't want to see like a Mission Impossible in space or a Mission
Why
Impossible.
Not?
I feel like there needs to be some sort of delineation between or among those three to sort of keep their, you know, their core fan values, their core mythologies, I'm just worried they're going to start to bleed.
I think Mission Impossible, it's a executive producer credit. He will have some oversight in the director and the writer, and then he's just going to leave that be. Star Trek is where it gets I think he might do the same thing with Star Trek. The question is whose hands does he leave it in? Please not.
Jon Favreau.
You know what? I would be fine with. Look, no, I'm more concerned about Orci and Kurtzman. I'm concerned about that being their baby from now on.
God.
Exactly. I want Star Trek to go in the hands of a person who understands Star Trek, and it's not those guys. So you can have your Star Wars, and that seems where his passion has always been. He always was really a Star Wars guy, and that's fine, and that's good. So partially for me, it's like, can we have Star Trek back and make it a Star Trek movie again where it's not big space battles, it's more of like a naval military show that has more in common with the series than wanting to be Star Wars. Because now you have Star Wars. Just make Star Wars. You have it now. You don't need to pretend with this other franchise. So that's my concern, is that he latches onto everything. Because, again, he wants to be Spielberg, as Spielberg has the executive producer of everything in the world. Except Spielberg attached himself to things that were risky and new and challenging. And all I see from Abrams so far is, let me take that franchise off your hands.
Let me also create 17,000 TV pilots.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, by the way, for people listening, Adam and I were talking about this at Sundance, and we want to clear up any confusion because it seems to persist. J.J. Abrams did not have anything to do with Lost beyond the pilot. He was an executive producer, and that show from then on was pretty much Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse. What J.J. Abrams does is he finds pilots he likes, he might direct the pilot, and he'll get that executive producer credit from the beginning of the show until it ends. But he is not a showrunner anymore. He was a showrunner on Felicity, and he was a showrunner on Alias, and that's it. So
he was just a sounding – like Damon even said like after like they filmed the pilot and he helped a little bit on the second episode. But then he was like, hey, Tom Cruise wants me to direct Mission Impossible, so I'm out. So, you know, you should find someone to help you run this show. And then like I think he directed he either directed or wrote the like season 2 premiere. I think he just co-wrote it.
Yeah, but then he goes on. I think he directed the pilot of Fringe. Do you do that?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
But it's ridiculous to say, like, oh, J.J. Abrams, he's going to bring a smoke monster in again. Like, I mean, that's not – that wasn't even
exactly
him. Like, him and Damon came up with a cool idea of something in the woods, and then Damon and Carlton fleshed it out to, like, oh, it's a smoke monster, and oh, it does this.
Right. So, again, so let's just be clear on what – no, because I think this is a good example of Abrams is good at what he has become – now is he's getting himself attached to the biggest projects, which allows him to shepherd in TV projects and mm-hmm. then keep his name on the franchise movies. Because I don't – and maybe J.J. Abrams isn't there yet. If he wants to be the next Spielberg, eventually he'll need to start grooming talent to follow him. Because that – for me, Spielberg's legacy will obviously be one of the greatest, most influential filmmakers of all time. But we shouldn't forget how many people he helped along the way. And my question is will J.J. Abrams help people? I'm sure he will eventually. But right now, he is still – it's weird. He's like in that line between protege and not protege, but not a mentor. It's that sort of middle ground where –
yeah, he's sort of in a transition.
Exactly. And that transition just happens to be with the biggest franchise of all time.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone else about this too, though, and something else that gives me hope about the new Star Wars. Michael Arndt is writing the screenplay, and he wrote Little Miss Sunshine, won the Oscar for that, but he's also been working at Pixar full-time for the past few years, and Disney is kind of the owner of this. So my assumption is that I think the Pixar brain trust will be involved in Star Wars in the same way they were in with Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol and, you know, a bunch of other movies. Like a bunch of studios now will take their movies up to like their – after they shot them, after they have like a cut or something, they'll take them up to San Francisco and show them to the Pixar brain trust and get notes, because those guys are
good with story and so good with giving just like notes.
What was
the
their
– so
what
I think
were
the
their
Pixar,
I would,
the Pixar brain trust will be at least a little involved.
Two things.
I think they'll be
– I'm sorry. What? I'm sorry. Keep going. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I did have a response to your Pixar comment.
Well, I was just saying, I think they'll be at least a little involved in kind of helping not like create the story, but just guide it and keep it on track with Star Wars. I don't think it'll be completely in Abrams' hands. And I think Kathleen Kennedy is going to have a very big role in this as well. Well, I mean, obviously, she's the producer. But.
Okay. Okay. Just two things. What were the Pixar notes when they were shown Tron Legacy? What must have that room been like where it's just like, oh, God, we can't do it. Sorry, it's too far gone, guys. Oh. Enjoy. There's nothing we can do.
It looks pretty.
Even that, it doesn't. I like Jeremy Slater's comment. It looks like a car battery fucked a glow stick. But even then, my other comment about Pixar is we talk about the Pixar brain trust, but let's look at the last two Pixar movies. What is that brain trust really? It's not what it once was. Adam, you've mentioned how those guys have started to go their separate ways, haven't you, like, sort of noting that what was there, that
well,
core
the,
group
the,
is starting
the individual
to...
directors have, but the brain trust, and Brad Bird was talking about this on Twitter the other day, that he's still involved in the brain trust, not in a full-time capacity anymore, but, I mean, it's Bird, Andrew Stanton, John Lasseter, God, I can't remember, Bob Peterson, who's directing the upcoming Dinosaur One, Pete Docter.
I think Lee Unkrich is in there too, isn't he?
Yeah, I think Lee Unkrich has been brought up into the brain. I don't think
you don't get to be part of the brain trust, Unkrich. You just see him sitting outside, sad, in the and eating at the cereal bar, just looking into the middle distance.
That is a good point, though. I mean, if you do look at, I mean, I think the brain trust is. I mean, obviously those guys are splintering off and doing their own things. But I feel like I don't think anyone's going to pass up the opportunity to see the new Star Wars early. So I think
I'm busy. Pete Docter's like, I am making a film that takes in place inside the mind of a little girl. I don't have time for lightsabers. Excuse me. I would love for that to happen. The person at Pixar who's too haughty for Star Wars. No, you're absolutely right. Everyone wants to be involved with this one. And in fact, that almost makes this more difficult. Do you think it makes it more difficult for a director where he has to balance so much input from other sources that there's no way he can do his own thing? Any director probably couldn't have done their own thing with this movie.
Well, I think that's actually a strength of Abrams. I mean, we talked about him sort of being the the ultimate sort of business guy behind the scenes for these things. So I think he knows how to handle a lot of different sort of
input. He knows how to handle a lot of different input, but he doesn't know how to handle story. his films don't have good stories.
I don't know. I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't say he doesn't know how to handle story. I think his writing credits are actually a lot stronger than most of his producing, or especially his directorial
credits.
Really?
You think Super 8 has a well-written ending?
I don't think it's awful, and Super 8 is just one of his writing credits. I mean, most of his writing credits come from TV, and they tend to be pretty solid across the board. Now, granted, he's not involved with it, you know, like Adam was saying, as a full-time basis. Well, but I mean, he's still got.
I never saw Felicity, but Alias is sort of a kind of a one-note show. And if you want to get, if you've never seen Alias, just watch Mission Impossible 3, because it's like a really long episode of Alias. It has masks. It has people doing foreign languages. The only difference is Alias, basically, there's this fake tension between Jennifer Garner and Victor Garber, where it's like, I love you, Daddy. I hate you, Daddy. I love you, Daddy. I hate you, Daddy. It's like, you betrayed me. No, you didn't. You betrayed me. Like, it just keeps going round and round and round. So when we're talking about, like, his strength as a storyteller, this kind of
goes... Well, like you just said, though, he's not involved on a day-to-day basis.
He was with Alias. Alias was his story.
Alias was his show for the whole run.
For almost the entire run, Alias was his. At the end of it, he was busy with Mission Impossible. But for almost the entire run, he was Alias and Felicity. Those are his two shows.
Okay. The thing with something like Fringe, or especially with Lost, you talked about, but with Fringe, I don't know how much he was involved beyond the original creation, but that's some of my favorite writing on TV. I did like the fact that, we're not here to talk about Fringe. But anyway, I think that with Michael Arndt, behind the screenplay of this thing, I don't know how much, you know, is he going to have the majority of the control over the script? Or like Adam was saying, is he going to get more influence from the rest of the brain trust? Or are they just going to kind of let him do his own thing? I feel like there's enough trust amongst that group that they'll kind of let him sort of take the lead on it. But I don't know. I don't really know how that works, to be honest with you.
I think Abrams has been dropping hints that they might not make the 2015 release date, and I don't think they will, because he's going to come on and he's going to have – I don't think he's going to radically change the screenplay, but as any director will and should, he's going to want to get it right, and he's going to want to have his input. So I think he and Arndt are going to collaborate now. I don't think he'll get a screenwriting credit, but I'm sure Arndt has a couple drafts done of it now. But you know, I think there's going to be some tweaking going on there. I think Abrams is going to have strong input in the story right now. And I think it comes 2016. I don't think it makes 2015.
He comes into the office. Okay, number one, I like what you've done. Number two, can it be a mystery? Because I like mysteries. That's sort of his thing. And I agree. Like, the question of authorship will be huge. And we don't even know – we do know the authorship. But we look back at Star Wars, A New Hope, and it's like, oh, it's George Lucas. No, it actually wasn't George Lucas. George Lucas came up with a thing called Luke Starkiller. And green Han Solo, and Princess Leia wasn't even in it, and he collaborated with people who told him no. Guess what happens when those people aren't there anymore? You get the prequels. Exactly. But with this one, you're right. You have Michael Arndt, you have J.J. Abrams, you're going to have Kathleen Kennedy, and then you have the Pixar people, and then you have probably like Damon Lindelof is like, nice script, and they hand it back. But it's going to go in front of a lot of eyeballs, in front of a lot of people who have notes. And again, the question is, for me, can J.J. Abrams sort through the noise and find the best story?
I'm curious to see how much – I mean, there's been reports that Lucas is not really going to be involved at all, but I can't imagine that. I can't imagine him just sort of giving the reins over completely to everybody else. So I would imagine he's got to stick his nose in it somehow.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he'll have a little bit of a say, but he's not going to – I don't think he'll micromanage. I think he'll be like, this looks good. Okay. Can we make more toys? And then he'll go and he'll – actually, honestly, I think George Lucas will be more interested in the technology of the film than any of the storytelling aspects. I think if we see any involvement from him, it'll be more like being excited about sound or visual. It'll be those kind of aspects that draw his attention more than storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings up another good point. Abrams was adamant about shooting Star Trek. He was adamant about shooting a Star Trek sequel on film, he said, because he wanted to match the first one. The first one was shot on film. All of Disney's tentpoles have in 3D, so we can assume that Star Wars will be 3D. But I think that this means that Abrams will likely want to shoot on film, which it's more important when you compare it to the prequels. I'm not initially opposed to digital, but just thinking about the prequels, I think that if the news comes out that he's shooting it on film, that will ease a lot of tensions. I wonder, what did you guys think about?
I actually think digital could work simply because the sequels will take place further in the future than the original trilogy, so digital implies something more futuristic. In fact, digital makes less sense for the prequels. The prequels probably should have been shot on film, but George Lucas wanted to play with all his toys, and he wanted to do digital and whatever. He did he did his thing. I think if the sequels are digital, I won't really mind that much. It won't. That is not my largest concern by far.
And Abrams has been talking up the 3D and the IMAX for the new Star Trek quite a bit, too, and a lot of these sort of behind-the-scenes featurettes and a lot of his little sound bites.
Well, he was
always
makes
sure
3D.
To – exactly. So he always sort of makes sure to kind of play that up. So I wouldn't be surprised going forward if he, you know, sort of did the same song and dance for the new Star Trek – or the new Star Wars coming up, too.
Yeah, it's all the same, Dave. I don't need to correct yourself.
I mean, it's getting to that point, though. It's getting to that point. I feel like a lot of people are going to be confused – come 2015 or 16.
Yeah, I've typed Star Trek for Star Wars in a couple of recent stories.
Star thing, and just move on with your day.
Star battles.
Yeah. Is there any other star search? What other things start with
Battle
star?
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Starman.
That's what I want J.J. Abrams to take on next, Starman.
A Starman remake.
Make it
somebody
happen.
Somebody is actually doing that.
Someone's remaking Starman?
It's sort of like his he was saying he wants to do sort of like a 1980s John Carpenter film, and he compared it to Starman. Oh, I can't remember who it is. So it's out there.
Let's just talk about that for the rest of the show. Let's just talk about Starman. Okay, so with J.J. Abrams directing, we're talking about the evolution of a story as well as a new story. And so we have the director. What's the timeline now in terms of getting the story right and casting? Do you think that by the end of 2013, the pieces will be in place to start shooting at the beginning of 2014? So we'll have our cast, we'll have our script, we're going to be good to go to make 2015 possible.
Okay, Star Trek Into Darkness comes out in May.
You're right, he's gonna. That's half of his year.
He has to do press for the foreign press for Star Trek Into Darkness. He's gonna want to have strong influence on the script for Star Wars. And he was like, remember, Paramount wanted Star Trek Into Darkness to come out in 2012, and he said, no. Like, if you've got me, I'm gonna do it right. So I think he's not afraid to put his foot down and say, if we're gonna do this, we're gonna do this right, especially with Star Wars.
The question,
so I think it's
for me. The question keeps about coming back to you is, what does he see as right?
Well, I mean, just taking that, not rushing into – I mean, everyone talks these days about, you know, coming onto a project as announced with a release date and no script. So I think he wants to make sure that the story and the script is in place. He knows that everyone has watched him. He knows he doesn't want to fuck this up. So I don't think he rushes things. And I don't see how he could devote his complete time to it until after he's done with those press commitments to Star Trek. So it would be June, July.
That's an excellent point.
Well, at the same time, this was announced, what, in October now? Is that when, like, the original trilogy was announced as coming out?
The sequel trilogy?
Wasn't back in October?
Yeah, that was about October.
And at that point, it came out a couple days after that aren't already had, I don't know, something like 60, 70 pages of a screenplay already kind of fleshed out, and they had already been preliminary talks about the story. So it's going to depend on how happy Abrams is with this current story that's in place. I mean, if it needs drastic rewrites, then, yeah, Adam's right, it's not going to make it until probably 2016. If everybody happens to be more or less on the same page with things, I don't see an issue why they couldn't get casting together by the end of the year, especially if that script happens to deal with the original cast, which that's a big question too.
The thing that gives me major pause or has me thinking that it's 2016 is that I don't remember when the interview was, like, last week or so. It was Abrams and Kennedy saying
they both
that, like,
said, like,
they said they are not tied down to that.
Exactly. Okay. I agree. And let's
I think they're giving
it.
Themselves leeway. They're trying to, like, ease people into it. Like, you know, don't hold your breath.
Also, that would just be Geekageddon between that, Avengers 2, and presumably Justice League. Who knows?
That's Justice – I don't think –
You don't think Justice League is – I don't know if Justice League is
no
ever going to happen.
No way. That thing is a mess.
If they're waiting for a green light after Man of Steel comes out,
they really don't have their shit together at
all. They have no idea
it's
what they're doing
mess.
With that.
Right.
They have no idea.
But
they
hey, even if things. Even if they push it back to 2016, there'll still be more Marvel movies on the way. You just can't get out of it. It's like, oh, you want to move out of the way of – Or Avengers 2, okay. Let's meet up with Doctor Strange or whatever else we want to throw your fucking way because we're Marvel, bitch. That's what you have to contend with now. But and God bless them. So you have Star Wars. Whenever that comes down...
Well, that brings up another point. What... Did you guys want to talk about these supposed spinoffs and like the Zack
Snyder?
Oh,
sweet
and...
Jesus, I forgot. Yeah, let's
Star Wars.
Yeah,
Star Wars taking the Marvel. I feel like Marvel has changed every. And someone at Cinema Blend did an editorial the other day about how Mark Webb, because people were talking about the Amazing Spider-Man 2 and having too many villains. And someone said that he's not cramming villains in there. He's creating his own universe of like for these people to branch out into other movies. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's changed the way that studios approach franchises now. And I'm interested to see if that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. I don't think that's an easy – I mean, obviously, it wasn't an easy thing to pull off. I don't think anyone agrees that every single Marvel movie was a home run. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this other
studios – I would say at the very least, from Iron Man on, you get at least a single. I think none of them have struck out.
No, I'm not saying they're bad, but I don't – like they weren't all like Avengers level.
Oh, absolutely. And just briefly, I will say – I will be the first to admit – if I'm wrong about J.J. Abrams turning in a great Star Trek 2 or an amazing Episode 7, because I was wrong as shit when I heard that Joss Whedon was directing the Avengers. I'm like, he's not ready. It's just not there. Risky. I was so fucking wrong. And I was happy to admit it because I liked the film. I don't like going around saying, I told you so. Let's look at how bad this is. Like, I don't like doing that, especially in my vaudeville voice, apparently. So... I understand. I want these movies to be good. I want to make that very clear. I'm just skeptical based on what I've seen so far from Abrams. That's all. But, Adam, speaking of skepticism, I'm also highly skeptical of Zack Snyder. I am! And is that wrong?
No, you should be.
I remember... Steve was...
My favorite Zack Snyder things to watch are his trailers.
And he doesn't make those.
I know, but he whatever he cuts together or whoever cuts these trailers together from his stuff is just like, well, this is the best we've got, and you're going to see it now for the next 90 seconds.
Out of context, his movies are amazing. But
yeah, they're fantastic.
Watch them.
Right, he makes perfect trailer films. And I remember Steve was, when we reported, like, Zack Snyder will do a Star Wars film based on Seven Dragons. It's like, oh, man, it'd be so cool to be like, what, speed ramping with lightsabers? Watch a tech demo and call it a day.
Maybe that's what I'll do. Maybe he'll just cut a bunch of trailers together for the new movie.
I can make Seven Samurai with lightsabers. I mean, actually, you know what? Anyone can make Seven Samurai with lightsabers. Just put it in in Final Cut Pro? Is there like a lightsaber effect that you can do? I'm sure there is. And just so take Seven Samurai, replace all the swords with lightsabers, you know, and then you're done. And we don't need to see Zack Snyder make a movie.
The thing that's interesting about that, though, is it does open up these other avenues of exploration for stories within the Star Wars universe. And I think that's a huge, huge opportunity to branch away from sort of this this arc of this nine-movie series that we're going to get.
And we're already there. We really are already there.
Clone
with Wars.
TV and yeah, exactly. So TV, the animated series, I think the TV opportunity is pretty cool. I don't know where that stands anymore. I know it's kind of been off and on for the last few years.
I think Disney wants to make that so hard right now. A live action Star Wars. Now that
absolutely. I mean, if the S.H.I.E.L.D. thing kind of takes off.
If S.H.I.E.L.D. takes off, I mean, they could have the biggest geek block ever.
Yeah.
And also, the thing I think that partially held up a Star Wars live action series, because it's been in talks for years and years and years, is A, technology, which just keeps getting cheaper, and B, who was going to distribute it? Well, thanks to conglomerates, Disney, which owns ABC, now has a place to put it. No matter what, that show has a home, so you don't need to shop it around either. I think...
Yeah, because Lucasfilm wanted to maintain a huge amount of creative control, and all the networks were like, okay, screw you. Like, we're not going to put up the money to distribute this, and you're going
to
keep
hand it over
the profits.
To you. Yeah.
But now that Disney owns Lucasfilm, I think they're essentially one and the same, so... It's much, much easier.
Right. But again, here's the thing with branching out. When you branch out into an expanded universe, how does that affect the main storyline? Do you have to start seeing Zack Snyder's Seven Samurai or Simon Kinberg and Lawrence Kasdan, what they're doing in order to come back to Episode 8? So if you have 7 and then there's a bunch of spinoffs before 8, do you have to see all that side stuff before coming back to 8? Is that how it's going to work?
I mean, it can if you want to take the sort of the Avengers model, but I think that's a different kind of model. Not everything else has to follow that. Doesn't mean that it won't. But since the Avengers all come together as a team of separate individual superheroes, that model makes sense for those, the Marvel films and the eventual Avengers sequels. I don't think you have to follow that in the Star Wars universe. There are already so many other branch-offs. They can take place at different points in time, different planetary systems on both sides of the coin as far as, you know, it could be the Empire, it could be the Rebels, it could be, you know, your the wretched hives of scum and villainy. It could be all that, all the sort of you know, the scavengers, the smugglers, all sorts of things. It's such a huge universe. I feel like you can take those separate stories and not have to worry about them really tying back into the main arc, unless you just want to put some sort of like Easter eggs or nods or bring a cameo of a character in for a little bit. But I don't think it has to follow the Marvel arc.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree with Dave. I feel like it could be something where, like in Star Wars, they say like, oh, did you hear about the Civil War going on in planet blah, blah, blah? Like, oh, yeah, right. That's pretty terrible. And they move along. And like that whole
cut to.
Did you hear about – you almost want to – you want it to be like old comics where there's like a little box appears in the lower hand corner and it references the movie and then followed by "Nuff said" and then moves on. It'll tell you what it's referencing in that moment. It's like Star Wars, the TV show, episode 3.
God. That honestly, like, as much as it's something like prequels, that was kind of the cool idea back in the day when, you know, they had sort of, I might have this wrong, I can't remember if they've mentioned Clone Wars or things like that in the original trilogy. If there was any sort of nod back to times that had happened before a long, long time ago. That was the interesting sort of tie-in that, when it was first announced, got people excited because it was like, oh, you're going to see these stories that we sort of made mentions of fully fleshed out. So I think you can do that moving forward by sort of setting it up ahead of time and then having other features or other TV shows.
That's a little different because someone said something and then it happened, whereas in the other situation, something happens and then it loops back to the main storyline. So it would have been as if the Clone Wars happened first, like there's this Clone Wars thing, and then in episode 4 they reference the Clone Wars thing that came first instead of the other
right, but
way around.
you can play with time too. So I mean, even if these new ones come forward, it's what, like a 30-year gap, I think, between the end of Return of the Jedi and this and the next film.
Return of the Jedi and episode 7.
Yeah, I thought it was supposed to be. No, I've read. It's rumored.
We don't know. Like solidly, we don't know anything.
No, solidly,
like the assumption is that it's a female lead, and right. It's linked to the Skywalker clan.
Also, I just say I like the idea of a female lead? And people got on me. It's because, I said, it's not a major franchise with a female lead. And what I meant was there's not a currently running franchise. Obviously, we have, like, Ripley and The Bride and so forth.
Yeah, Hunger Games is the closest
but,
thing.
Right, yeah, right now the only thing we have is Hunger Games. So.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I'm really psyched that it's a female lead.
For now, who knows?
Well, I feel like that's something that's lacking, and something like that's such a good role model instead of fucking Taylor Swift singing about boys.
Taylor Swift that... with her boys and jelly beans and stickers.
But I did want to say something about the spinoffs. I'm interested to see how they move forward because I don't know if they were planning spinoffs on certain characters, but I feel like you can't go ahead and bank on audiences really enjoying this, you know, like supporting character from episode 7 mm-hmm. to go ahead and put like pre-production in place for a spinoff. Like, I don't know if I'm interested to see if they want to go ahead and start moving on these things or if they're going to wait until 7 comes out. I mean, obviously Zack Snyder, I don't know if Warner Brothers is happy with Man of Steel or not, but if they are, they're going to want him to come back for the sequel, which they'll want to move forward on quickly. So, you know, I'm interested to see if these spinoffs are further down the road, if they happen between 7 and 8 or if they happen after 8 or
right. Well, the other problem is that Star Wars has to invent its characters for the most part. For when it comes to Avengers, it's like, who here likes Hulk? Everyone raises their hands. Good. Hulk gets to be in the movie. It's a known quantity with Hulk. You can't say like, you know, Glib Glob Glam in episode 7 will have his own movie. It's like you have to.
It's gonna be the best.
Of course, if you told me it's like episode the spin, there's gonna have a spinoff, Star Wars Jawa fun times. Like I'd be like, buy me all the tickets, because at least there's a known thing. But I mean, once we get into the sequels, and let's say there is a 30-year gap. I mean, how many people? And I think Dave, you make a good point. It could be 30 years, assuming that they want Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, and Carrie Fisher to all return. That
without de-aging them.
Yeah, the technology certainly ain't there for that yet. We're not there. So you bring them back, and that creates that time jump. Well, then it's not like you can sort of travel back and be like, I guess you could. Do we want a Lando Calrissian spinoff? I wouldn't be willing to entertain the idea.
Billy Dee Williams is drinking 40s, smuggling.
Yes.
Hell yes.
Exactly. So let's not rule that out. Actually, let's make it happen. Lando Calrissian on his own.
Jaden Smith plays Lando Calrissian.
I know
what you're
saying. Billy Dee Williams is the only Lando Calrissian. Although someone was, I think a friend of mine was joking about how, let's see Boba Fett's grandkid. Because in the books, apparently, and obviously the books are fuzzy when it comes to canon, but I'm pretty sure Boba Fett survived the Sarlacc pit by using grenades to blow himself out of it. Someone can double check me on this, but I believe Boba Fett survived the Sarlacc pit.
Well, and why did he do that, though? Like, why did they do that after the movie came out? Because it was such a popular character. I mean, if that's true, I'm sure it was just written to be like, oh, shit, probably shouldn't kill this guy off because everybody loves him.
Oh, exactly. And that's the thing. Will there be more of the Fett clan, which is such a fanboy wank. It really is, to just make the Fetts a huge part of this universe.
You're really endearing yourself to the listeners right now.
To quote fanboys, which I've seen and kind of like, it's a guy with a jetpack. What makes him so fucking special?
A bounty hunter spinoff would be an interesting thing.
That would be cool. I want to see what IG-88 is up to.
Heck yeah, man.
And that's Bossk.
Gotta love Bossk.
Of course. And Zuckus.
That's the best part, I think, of this potential TV series going forward, is to see sort of that seedy underbelly.
Exactly. There's a huge world there. And people, when you get into the video games, like Knights of the Old Republic is an amazing game because it just lets you,
there you go.
Live
That's a
in
whole
it. And then, spin-off of course, the happen. Old Republic has, I'd say it's taken off. It's sort of wrestled with its pay model. But obviously people love the idea of just a massive multiplayer online game of Star Wars. It's a great idea. A friend of mine is a Sith warrior who's really nice to everyone, which is just like, you can do that. You can be a part of this world. And I think Clone Wars really is just a microcosm of everything that's possible. And the question is again, how many avenues do you have? I mean, a Star Wars, even if there's a live action Star Wars show, it still has to keep to a plot.
Sure.
And it has to keep to a time period. So would it be set after the original trilogy, or would you send it all the way back to the Old Republic, which people really like? People really like the Old Republic because it's
well, that's the free. Flexibility and the freedom that you have being in this universe. You can set it whenever you want and tie it back however you need to. That's the cool thing about it. And honestly, you guys made a good point earlier about having to test characters with audiences in these features. And obviously features take a few years to sort of do everything from pre-production to release, and it takes time. But anymore, these sort of the digital shorts and digital series are coming out more and more often. They're getting better and better in quality behind the camera and in front of the camera. I feel like this is one of those areas where if you wanted to branch out and not just do a TV series, but do a series of digital shorts that maybe follow Boba Fett's grandson or whatever on his wild adventure.
Lil Fett. The Adventures of Little Boba Fett. But
played by Jaden Smith.
Man, you're all about this.
But actually, Dave, you make sort of you raise an interesting point where when it comes to bringing these characters into the main storyline, you can almost see the TV series is like the minor leagues where you introduce them there, and if they catch on with fans, then you give them their own movies. So if, let's say, just for an example that wouldn't work, but if this universe had allowed it, Sawyer probably would have gone in his own movie from Lost, because it's the most popular character and people want to see more of him. So if the Star Wars show had its own Sawyer, then they're like, well, let's give this guy a spinoff, and then maybe we...
Well, I mean, yeah, Nathan take Fillion. Characters from the existing films, too. Like, take a young Han Solo and Chewbacca, smuggling pirate series. See him in his, younger days before he got involved with the Resistance. I mean, who the hell knows, float that one out there as a digital series or even as part of the TV
show. Although I think prequels are less interesting because we know where it's going to end up. We do know that he's going to get away. It's like, what happens to Han Solo? Well, he's got some carbonite in his future. That's what happens to Han Solo. Okay, so already in the span of about 45 minutes, we have gone through so much Star Wars and yet only scratched the surface. And the killer is, it's not even begun.
We know nothing.
And I know it will never happen, but a brief reprieve from when J.J. Abrams is doing Star Trek stuff, it's like, well, maybe they'll just keep everything under wraps. Of course not. We're going to entertain every bit of speculative nonsense that comes our way, because that is what we do here. Sigh.
I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention perhaps J.J. Abrams' most exciting and hopefully successful project in the future, a little film called Collider. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I thought that was Edgar Wright.
It is. Edgar Wright's directing
it. And J.J. Abrams. J.J. Abrams is producing it, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great because it shares the name of our site. And will completely kill us in Google. We're like, we're so excited. Shares the name of our site. And then Collider will just vanish off the main page of Google. I think Collider is the number one search result if you type in Google. Hold on, let me double check. Yes. Which outranks the Large Hadron Collider, the thing that could destroy the planet. Go movies! All right, let's move on to recommendations. Adam, what do you got?
I am going to recommend another movie that was produced by Kathleen Kennedy, and it marked a sort of departure from her longtime partnership with Steven Spielberg. She produced her husband Frank Marshall's film Congo. It's a 1995
No, you did not just recommend Congo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Congo.
Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's a lot of fun. Okay. Oh, it's
go on. Go on and recommend Congo.
That's what I'm doing. It's my recommendation. I mean, it's no Lincoln, but, you know, it's still Kathleen Kennedy.
Lincoln needs more throwing eyeballs at Bruce Campbell.
That's the thing. This movie is really kind of crazy, and it's not a good movie, but it's really fun. Frank Marshall directed it. It's based on a novel by Michael Crichton. Centers on an expedition to the African Congo ends in disaster, and so a new team is assembled to go out there and find out what happened. This new team consists of Laura Linney and Dylan Walsh and Grant Heslov, who is George Clooney's writing partner and could very well earn a Best Picture Oscar this year for producing Argo. And it includes a lot of animatronic gorillas and monkeys, and John Hawks is in it, and things go crazy.
And Laura Linney. I mean, there are people in this movie. I agree.
Yeah, Tim Curry. Tim Curry has a really goofy accent. He's a Romanian philanthropist. And they basically go on this expedition, and it's almost like a horror movie. Mm-hmm. Basically, Jurassic Park came out and did really well in this. It's Jurassic Park with gorillas in the African Congo. And they're very violent, dangerous gorillas. There's a lot of blood. Eyeballs are thrown.
The moral of the message is we really need
frickin'
to wipe
lasers.
Out these. Lasers. Oh, I forgot about the lasers. You know what? I retract it. Yeah, go ahead and recommend Congo.
Jesus.
Adewale Akinwunmi Agbaje is in it, who played Mr. Echo
that.
On Lost.
Don't forget Joe Don Baker.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, you should see it. This is before like the CGI boom, so these are all animatronic puppet, people in mask gorillas, and the central gorilla has a communication device that when she sign languages it talks. So she says, "Amy, hungry. Amy, pretty. No, go away. Go away, gorilla." And she talks to all the other gorillas with her little gorilla voice.
IMDb says if you liked – people who liked this also liked The Time Machine.
I liked it with Samantha Mamba.
With Guy Pearce.
That's – you know what? It's not a good movie, but that's – it's an entertaining movie.
Okay.
It's quotable too. So many good quotes from the gorilla. Fantastic.
So – Congo, seek it out. Okay. Watch it. It's a good time. Friday night, get some beers. You know,
get
watch
some
Congo.
Beers.
Dave.
It's a drinking movie. It's a drinking
get
movie.
Some beers. Not... Watch Congo. Hey guys, come over my place Friday. We're gonna have a beer.
Let's sit back, relax, and watch Congo.
I'm all for it.
Right. Oh, Dave, go.
I'm gonna go with Cloverfield because it was
that's no Congo.
That's no Congo.
If Congo had a viral marketing campaign, it could have been.
Definitely could have been. And that's why I'm bringing Cloverfield up, because it was basically the start. I don't think there was anything before this that involved J.J. Abrams to the level of viral marketing and secrecy over a movie. I remember when this came out, the teaser for this came out, it was basically just a real quick blip of sort of this staticky kind of first-person camera footage. And that's really all you got. You got a bunch of people screaming, and then you got sort of maybe this like leg of a Godzilla-type monster that was stomping through New York City. And that's all you got for like 8 months. And then you got the teaser title, which was then Cloverfield, and it ended up just sticking throughout the entire
production. Yeah, people didn't even know what it was called. People thought it was like a date for at some point. They thought it was like...
Yeah, they shot that before they shot the movie, like they did with Super 8. They shot the teaser separately, like before they even made the movie.
Exactly, and that was sort of like the template, and that set sort of the future for Abrams-type TV shows and movies as far as the secrecy goes, and kind of keeping everything locked down, and not explaining who the fuck a villain is in a major sequel coming up.
That's something I did. I mean, just not to go too far back in the conversation, but that does really bother me about J.J. Abrams. I think he's way too involved in marketing.
I wanted to set you off.
I know! No, but Adam, remember Steve's tweet where he's like, I like that Abrams hides things. I like not knowing about movies. Yeah, that made my day. And I was already having a great day. Dave, I'm sorry. Continue with Clover.
That's pretty much why I wanted to bring Cloverfield up, because this was sort of the beginning of the theme that we currently get with Abrams movies. A lot of secrecy, a lot of viral marketing, things sort of unveiled over time, not knowing everything when you go into a movie. And I understand Steve's point that you want a little bit of mystery, you want a little bit of secrecy. I think Abrams takes a little too far and not telling you anything about movies that are coming up. But Cloverfield was a good example, and he was a producer, maybe executive producer on this. It was a fun movie, actually fairly well reviewed for when it came out. It was sort of in the vein of Godzilla without being Godzilla for marketing reasons. Really expected a sequel to come out at some point, since this was back in 2008 that it came out. Abrams got involved with other stuff, obviously Star Trek, Mission Impossible. We're going to see something similar again with the new Godzilla reboot, hopefully. We'll see how close it is to Cloverfield, but... If you're hankering for some good old-fashioned giant monsters stomping on the city and eating a bunch of random people as they run around screaming, check out Cloverfield, Matt Reeves' film from 2008.
Okay. My recommendation has nothing to do with J.J. Abrams or Kathleen Kennedy. I saw this movie last week, and I want to recommend it. And it's Searching for Sugar Man, which is a documentary. It's been nominated for the Oscar for Best Documentary. And it's a really wonderful film. It's about this... singer named Rodriguez, who cut two albums in the 1970s. And even though the album's producers were just completely wowed by him, for some reason his albums never caught on. And they play you songs in the documentary, and they're great songs. If you like Bob Dylan, and it's that kind of great folk music of the era. And so he never takes off there, and he just kind of fades into obscurity where no one knows what happens to him. There are a lot of rumors that he's dead, and that people don't even know how he died. He's just dead. The thing is his music became huge in South Africa, where it became almost the anthem against apartheid in the 1970s. And the documentary finds him. And it's so rewarding. You see this guy, and it's just, what if your music touched the lives of millions of people and you never knew? And it's just, it's funny. The music is great. It's kind of bittersweet, but uplifting. And I really enjoyed it. And so I saw it on iTunes. So I think it's at least available there. I don't know if it's available on any other on-demand platforms, but I highly encourage you to seek it out, Searching for Sugar Man.
And spoiler alert, he was hiding in the Congo the entire time, just to tie it back into Adam's recommendation.
Thank you, spoiler alert.
Sorry, but had to do it.
They find him in the Congo.
Just communicating with gorillas.
Who knew? He's alive.
And lasers.
Next week, we're not sure what we're talking about, but right now, at the top of my head, what I'd like to talk about, because his new film opens... Steven Soderbergh's Side Effects opens, and I'd like to talk Soderbergh because he's been around for a while. He's had a huge influence, but he's always kind of done his own thing. And so I'd like to talk about that, but who knows? Maybe we'll get the first...
And he's going away.
Yeah, he's retiring or going to TV or something.
He's got one film left, and it's on HBO. And for who knows. I mean, maybe he'll stay retired, maybe he won't, but hey, maybe a new piece of Star Wars news will break, so maybe we'll just talk about that next week.
Fingers crossed.
Oh, boy. Okay, if you want to...
Jaden Smith.
Oh, my God. When he actually gets cast in the movie, we're all going to lose our minds. We're going to link...
I feel like it's not out of the realm of possibility.
We're going to link back... From then on, we're going to link back to this episode every time. Okay. If you want to keep up with this podcast on Twitter, you can follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Adam Chitwick.
And Dave?
At Dr. Claw, MD.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.